Hello, everyone. This is the second episode of Anatolian Dispatch, in which we look at the goings-on in Turkey, in particular in its relationship with the United States. My name is Ed Stafford. I'm a retired Foreign Service officer whose last assignment abroad was in Turkey as the Counselor for Political Military Affairs. Since leaving Turkey, I've maintained a strong interest in the country because I believe that it is of vital importance to the United States and our relationship with that part of the world. Today, I'll be speaking with my good friend Ilhan Taner of Aval News. I would encourage all of you who have any interest in Turkey to follow Aval News closely. There's a lot of great information. I think it's probably your best independent source of information about what's going on in Turkey. And with that, let's get started. I know, Ilhan, you had a couple of questions for me to make some comments on. And so go ahead.
Yes, thank you so much. And every week there's so much going on with Turkey, obviously. Let me start with this newest letter signed by 176 members of the Congress. Some say it's little over 180 now. Obviously, there was another letter 2 weeks ago at the Senate, and 54 senators signed that letter. Both of them, basically, one of them, the first one addressing President Biden, this one addressing Secretary Blinken, both of them talking about the human rights violations in Turkey and asking the administration to hold accountable Turkey's president and do not change any kind of policy with regards to Turkey unless Erdogan changes his policies. Let me start with this. Can you tell us what does this letter mean? Will this change anything in Washington, D.C.?
Actually, I don't think it's going to change anything, which is very bad news for President Erdogan. This letter, sometimes these letters are actually written to put pressure on the administration to change what people think it is going to do. In other times, these letters would, you know, open letters to someone senior in the administration, for example, the Secretary of State, as in this letter, are there not to remind him what his agenda is, but to get out there for public comment what the agenda is and how they support it. So in other words, even though this was addressed to Secretary of State Antony Blinken, it was really addressed to President Erdogan. Mm-hmm. And that is why, I mean, the last count I have is a total of 181 members of the House of Representatives. Now, the House has 435, so that's not even a majority, but it is a really substantial number of people. It's almost 40% of the members of the House of Representatives have signed off on it. The other thing about it, which is striking, is it is truly bipartisan. Now, it is shaded towards the Democrats. What I have a count of 120 Democrats signed this letter and 61 Republicans. Now, okay, 2-1 Democrats to Republicans in what is actually almost a 50-50 split in the House of Representatives. But what that shows you is that there is bipartisan support for this administration's strong rhetoric about the importance of human rights situations in a country for its foreign policy. This administration, much more than its predecessor, has said that human rights in a country will be an important consideration in the relationship between the United States and that country. This one is specifically about Turkey. So it's actually simply underlining that the Biden administration's focus on human rights enjoys widespread bipartisan support in the House of Representatives, which is to say, you're not going to be able to drive a wedge between the House of Representatives and the president on the foreign policy issue of human rights.
Let me ask a follow-up on this. Actually, what surprises me is it's supposed to be a bigger number, larger number of signatures, because literally we don't, I mean, I don't know anyone in Congress defending the Turkish government for a while. Today, a statement came out, by the way, from the co-chairs of the Turkish-U.S. Caucus friendship group, and four of them there, and two of them, Jerry Connolly and Steve Cohen, also signed the letter, came out yesterday. And another question, obviously, why they waited so long for this PKK condemnation. It has been almost 3 weeks, I think. Perhaps they just realized. Anyway, my question is why there aren't more people. For example, why Senator Menendez this 54 signed letter, why he did not sign it? That's what I question.
Well, I mean, part of that really, or most of that really, has to do with internal politics in the United States. So returning to this letter to Blinken, there are a large number of members of the House, more on the Republican side than on the Democratic side, that do not want to get back into a situation where the United States is trying to impose it or interfere in the internal political situation of another country. Now, having said that, the idea that countries do not try, never interfere in the internal workings of another country is a fable. Every country does it. Every country tries to have influence not only on the relationship, but the internal workings of the other country. Most of the time, though, it is done in subtle and non-public ways. Okay, so for example, you would have someone like Secretary Blinken speak to Foreign Minister Çavuşoğlu in a private, confidential conversation and say, look, the United States is really concerned about the human rights situation in Turkey, and we really think you guys need to do better. But you would never know about that. So one of the reasons not everyone signed this letter is because many, many, both Democrats and Republicans, but more Republicans than Democrats, believe that quiet, private diplomacy is more effective than this sort of public statement. Having said that, for the House, a lot of people also realize, and hopefully the diplomats, the Turkish diplomats in Washington, will communicate this back to Ankara. The House of Representatives really has very little to say in what goes on in U.S. foreign policy. Senators do, which will segue back to Senator Menendez. Why didn't he sign that letter? Menendez is clearly identified already as someone who is on the side of ethnic minorities in Turkey. In a sense, if he had joined that Wyden and Rubio letter, it would have almost looked like piling on. Again, Menendez knows how to have influence on U.S. foreign policy. He is, in some ways, less concerned about all the different human rights issues facing Turkey, and he's more concerned about the ones that his constituents in New Jersey bring to his attention. A significant percentage of those constituents are Armenian Americans. There's a large concentration of Armenian Americans, and by that I mean most of them, of course, are two or three generations removed from Armenia or the Ottoman Empire. I mean, their grandparents or great-grandparents may have come from what was then the Ottoman Empire, not they themselves. They themselves, by and large, are third or even fourth generation Americans. But they consider themselves part of that great Armenian diaspora, and they have been reliable sources of campaign funding for Senator Menendez. That really is, with Turkey, his biggest issue. Senators Wyden and Rubio and the others who signed that, which was a majority of the senators, it was 54 senators, they're looking at a much broader picture. Their concerns go beyond the whole question of whether what happened in 1915 was or was not a genocide. They're looking at the entire, what would you call it? The entire picture of human rights, whether it is freedom of the press, whether it is an independent judiciary, whether it is LGBT rights, etc.
This is a good segue to actually follow up another development today. Tuesday, we are talking about March 2nd. President Erdogan today made this big announcement. And, you know, there were kind of a dozen of items, the action plan. These are about the human rights and rule of law. And, you know, I mean, statements are good, great. Like, for example, he said that no one can be deprived of their freedom due to criticism and opinion. That's great. And there are a few others, this, you know, very good statements. It goes well with the universal values. But at the same time, the guy who made this announcement has been ruling this country for almost two decades. Anyway, I'm not going to comment on that, but let me ask you, okay, so Biden administration wants Turkey to improve its human rights, and as we have discussed today, Congress, both Senate and the representatives also want Turkey to improve. And here Erdogan came with a new plan, new reforms. Is this going to help mending ties with either Biden administration or the EU, you think?
Well, I think both of them have over the years, I actually hope more than I'm certain of it, but I really strongly hope that they have learned, as the English would say, the proof of the pudding is in the tasting. Or as Ronald Reagan reportedly said, trust but verify. This is not the first time that President Erdogan, the other times were some when he was prime minister, has talked about the need to reform the judiciary in a positive way that takes into account the fundamental freedoms and liberties of people in a democracy, so forth and so on. And yet, I believe Turkey, if it's not the leading jailer of journalists, is certainly in the top three. The competition with China is pretty intense, but China has a lot more people. So I think, I don't know so much whether the EU will get its act together and make it clear that they want to see results before they start behaving as if everything has gotten better. Remember that Antony Blinken was the Deputy Secretary of State in the last couple of years of the Obama-Biden administration, and that Jake Sullivan had a senior position, National Security Advisor had a senior position. There are a lot of people in the foreign policy establishment of the Biden administration who have extensive experience in the past dealing with Erdogan. They are also, you can see this in different comments they make, they do not believe that President Trump's maladministration of the relationship wholly explains how Erdogan undermined the rule of law and human rights, the respect for human rights in Turkey. In other words, they're not naive about what's going on. And I think in particular in Washington, D.C., the foreign policy community inside the administration is going to demand proof, actions, deeds, rather than just words before they take, they liberalize things. And on that, I want to point out something that might seem unrelated, but I think actually is. Many people are lamenting the fact that with this CIA declassified assessment, which one has to be familiar with reading these intelligence assessments to really pick it apart. But for the moment, just say that the assessment, you know, makes clear that Mohammed bin Salman was responsible for the operation to capture or kill. And that's a very important nuance they threw in there. Jamal Khashoggi. In response, a number of people in Saudi Arabia are facing sanctions and travel bans and so forth and so on. And the same thing is now going to happen to some senior people in the Russian government for their attempt to assassinate Mr. Navalny. This may seem unrelated to the conduct of President Erdogan in the treatment of people inside Turkey. And we don't have any evidence at this point that he has been as ruthless towards Turkish opponents as Putin has been towards his opponents or Mohammed bin Salman has been. But clearly what the administration has done is it said that though there may not be direct consequences for the head of government or the head of state for gross human rights violations, there will be consequences for those people who are very close and very directly engaged with that head of government or head of state in perpetrating these very serious human rights violations. I can't hear you.
Sorry, I just muted. So that's very well understood. That means that what, maybe a few months, Washington is going to wait and see whether Erdogan is making any real change.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think absent any dramatic actions, that they're really going to wait a few months before they would start, you know, believing what he's saying. They really are going to want to see something. And by the way, this letter by the 181 members of the House of Representatives simply reinforces that. I mean, they sent this to Blinken, and what they were saying to him was, you know, look, these problems in Turkey did not happen overnight, and they're not going to be resolved overnight. So take your time, be careful. You know, a number of people have commented on the fact that in the 20 years, in effect, whether as prime minister or as president, that President Erdogan has dominated the political life in Turkey. He's managed, what, at least three presidents? And I think objectively looking at those relationships, he was more skillful in reaching his goals than they were in reaching theirs.
Yes, and the first time also, I think the first president is the fourth president that he cannot really start a good relationship in the first days or first months. You know, the Bush, he came to White House before he became prime minister. He was that close to George Bush. And the second term, George Bush, again, he was close. And then Obama was a great news, obviously. It took a little while for him to, you know, get a good relationship with Obama, but only a couple months, you know, Obama went to Turkey in early 2009 as a first bilateral overseas visit. Then the second term also, Obama was very close still. Things weren't that bad between Turkey and U.S., and we all know Trump, and now for the first time, a president who knows him very well. And it looks like this time Erdogan is going to take little more than announcing new human rights action plan than convince a new U.S. president. From here, I kind of want to, you know, talk about little more regional issue, which is that the Iranian missiles landing in Erbil, then Turkish ambassador in Baghdad and Iranian ambassador in Baghdad are fighting with each other. And there are several commentaries. I do not necessarily agree with them, but now there are some debates that whether Turkey, with the new Biden administration, Turkey's relations with Iran are coming to head to head. We will see. But what do you think about this latest tension between Tehran and Ankara and potential repercussions for Washington, D.C.?
Well, I think the first thing is to say that the relationship between Iran and Turkey has always been one of what we used to call frenemies. They've been generally friendly relations, but at the same time, cautious with each other. I know that many Turkish business people that I've spoken with simply do not like doing business in Iran. They feel it is too much in the hands of the kleptocracy of the IRGC. And so on financial arrangements, unless you're, you know, very well connected, it's not a place to do business because you don't have any protection. On this specific recent disagreement, what you're really seeing is Iran, in effect, sees Iraq as a subordinate state and continues to try to exert influence and control, actually full control, over Iraq via the Shia militias in the country, which are almost all, not all, but almost all are Iranian backed. And so for the Iranians, the notion that the Turks would be able to move into northern Iraq and carry out military operations, which are always directed against the PKK, just offends their sensitivities. The attack in Erbil against the American outpost was clearly undertaken by Iranian-backed Shia militias. Ironically, probably some who are part of the popular defense forces. I'm not sure if that's the exact, you know, the popular mobilization units, the PMUs, that are basically Shia groups who are put together in order to fight ISIS. But they're still around. And they are the ones who launched the missiles into the American facility in Erbil and killed a contractor and wounded some others, to which Biden responded by a very limited airstrike against those militias' outpost, which is right on the border in western Iraq with Syria. Although it is within the Syrian boundary, we believe. I don't know that it has much repercussion for the United States. At this point, you know, the United States, there's very little enthusiasm in America to get deeper into Iraq. The idea of somehow increasing U.S. military presence in Iraq it's unimaginable that it would be. But the other thing that does matter is that the Iranians, the Iraqis, and the Turks all know that Joe Biden and people in his administration are much friendlier towards the Kurds, not the PKK, but to the Kurdish regional government and to the Kurdish people in general than Donald Trump was. Donald Trump was a transactional operator. He was very happy to use Kurdish fighters against ISIS when it was useful. And then when it was no longer necessary, at least by his lights, it was no longer necessary, you just drop them. And that's the famous December 2018 phone call where President Erdogan said, "We can take care of this." And President Trump said, "Yeah, go ahead." That's not the sort of response that President Erdogan would get. Now, the situation, of course, has changed dramatically. But I really think that there's this argument between the Turkish government and the Iranian government is really more about the Iranians trying to reassert that Iraq is in their sphere of influence, and that includes northern Iraq. That is not in the Turkish sphere of influence. Because they clearly see that Erdogan is trying to extend the Turkish influence beyond Turkey's borders to include parts of northern Syria and to include a free hand against the PKK in northern Iraq.
And meanwhile, this is a long conversation, but just to add here, it has been 5 weeks so far, and we have not heard anything about Kurds, Syrian Kurds. We don't know what U.S. government is going to do about it. Brett McGurk hasn't spoken. I don't think he is going to speak out very much. But it's I just saw CENTCOM commander McKenzie. He gave this interview to Beirut Institution a couple of days ago, and he was very respectful when he was talking about Turkish role. And he said Turkish role in northern Syria, they expect Turkish role to continue there, and added this classic phrase that Turkey has legitimate concerns over there. So it was kind of a cold water, I think, for those in the region that, you know, waiting for some kind of signal, either from Pentagon, from CENTCOM, or from any of these top officials that Biden administration is going to kind of do some pushback against the Turkish forces. But so far, I haven't seen, and the CENTCOM commander hasn't said anything. On the contrary, actually, CENTCOM commander was kind of saying that this thing is going to continue.
Yeah, I don't think the affection that many people in the Biden administration have for the Kurdish people, I don't believe that translates into any sort of military support for the, you know, certainly not for the PKK, but even for the YPG beyond asserting that those traditionally Kurdish areas of northern and northeastern Syria should be left in the hands of the Kurdish population. In other words, there's no appetite in the Pentagon, in CENTCOM, to, you know, send in American troops. And you have to be very careful about signaling. If they give the wrong signals, you can give false hope to people, whether it's the YPG or the SDF, that somehow the Americans are going to come back and we're going to reverse the withdrawal of most American military personnel from Syria. I don't think that's likely. And, you know, now, if the Turks or their irregular forces with whom they're allied in Syria, or the Russians were to somehow start committing atrocities against the Kurdish population in northern Syria, that would change everything. But that doesn't seem to be on the horizon. In fact, the Russians seem to be very concerned that the kind of modus vivendi that they have worked out, this way of living alongside the Turkish military units there, continues, and that no one really unbalanced things. So I think that's where we are, and I think that's where we're going to stay for some time.
Okay, it's going to be interesting journey, especially I am very much looking forward to this first year. And as slowly, hopefully, these pandemic conditions will go away, at least hopefully in the United States. We don't know the Turkish stories in Turkey is very much in the air. They are already reopening part of the country. And there aren't enough vaccines, and the ones that they have is Chinese, which have the lowest efficacy in the world, so just above 50%. Let's see. Thank you so much.
All right. Good. Take care. Stay well, and I'll see you next week.
Okay. Cheers.
You can follow Ahval News Online podcast series through Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, and Spreaker. All you need to know about Turkey is here, for your ears, mind, and attention. Thank you for listening to our podcast.